the stats, the salt, the sanity, and every so often, they talk about sports, too.
Here is Eric Dorsch, Russ Ivanek, and Justin Marcus. This is Armchair Sports Talk.
But I belong to the drinking class. Monday through Friday, man, we bust our backs. Lift you one of us, raise your glass.
Yeah, I don't bust my back ever. It's really just not for me. But I know for a fact we all three of us are definitely members of the drinking class. I've been around these two. When it's time to knock a couple back, and we're all fairly professional at that. Another great week of sports, another great week to talk about here on Armchair Sports Talk. I am your host, Eric Dorsch. As always, joined by Sergeant Salty Justin Marcus.
Hello, hello. I will be a part of the drinking class around 12:27 on Saturday. I feel like I'm going to need one by then.
Probably going to need one by then. And the stat man, Russ Ivanek, how are we doing today?
I'm doing well. I'm excited for rivalry week because I'm on the good side of it right now.
Yeah, we're both on the great side of it right now, but we've got things to talk about before we get that. We really do. Our Lions are 500 right now, folks. I don't know if anybody else is as excited as I am about that. Lions pull off a literally last second 23-22 win over the Atlanta Falcons. Listen, I said it last week. I'll say it again this week. This is a very, very bad Atlanta Falcons team. I would go as far to say that they might be just right there with Jacksonville, except they can move the ball a little better. Other than that, both bad teams. So while this win is great, and it gets us back to 500, I'm also not one of those people like we're seeing on Twitter talking about, okay, they've got juice, they got this going again. Yeah, they've won two in a row. They've won two in a row against teams that have a combined 2-10 record right now. Literally, they're as good as the Dallas Cowboys, New York Giants, Washington football team, and whoever else I forgot one more, but I don't really care. Philadelphia Eagles. They're as good as that division. So it is what it is. It was a great win. Stafford played great, 25 of 36, 340, one touchdown. I predicted a Stafford four-touchdown kind of day. We really didn't get that. We kind of got it in other places. Another week where the running game just wasn't there, didn't really do anything great. Adrian Peterson led the team with 11 carries for 29 yards. 2.6 is not going to get it done. It's just not going to get it done. But Kenny Galladay is back with a resurgence. We're going to talk about him in a little bit. I have an interesting question for these two that I want to see what kind of answer I can get out of them. Marvin Jones had a great day, but I want to focus first and foremost on Justin's guy. We've talked about him almost every week since the season started. Jay, you made some comments earlier today in the text thread about him. TJ Hockenson, five catches, 59 yards, one touchdown, and that one touchdown happened to be the game winner. Before we get to it, I want to ask you guys, unfair that TJ catches a little bit of flack for on that drive not getting out of bounds like it was that big of a deal. They still pulled off the victory, Jay.
It's still very much a big deal. He got tied up by the first guy, and it looked like he was going to come off of that tackle and try to go left and up. And then the second guy came in, and he went backwards, and they blew the whistle. You got to get out.
Rusty?
Yep, I agree. It's an undisciplined error that this is all we keep hearing about is this. You take them high, you take them from Iowa because they're a tight end school, right? You know these little things. He's lucky. Stafford bailed out him and everyone else with that final throw, not the opposite.
Okay, and I agree, but to play the devil's advocate, nothing to be said there for in a point where you don't know what the next play is going to look like. You have a guy fighting for every single yard he can get.
A yard is less important than a second in that timing. Do not fight for the yard. Get the hell out of bounds. Okay. That's 101.
No, I agree. He should have turned right. He turned left. He turned to the infield. You don't do that. I get that. I get it. But, Jay, you said earlier today, and we had to kind of translate it because how you phrased it made it sound like you thought he was Jeff Okuda for a minute.
I was confused.
Yeah, that's fine. But over the last year and a half, we've been very, very critical of Hawk, but we've also had a lot of praise for Hawk. And I kind of want to ask you more for, obviously for everyone else who isn't on our text thread. Jay said that he kind of needs to stop thinking of him as a, you know, an eighth overall pick. He needs to start kind of reevaluating how he looks at him. And I guess I'm asking you, what do you mean by that? What in your evaluation do you have to change?
I think, Russ and I had a good conversation off air about this, but I think when I'm comparing the draft picks that were around him, that's where I get anxious, and I'm like, but I want that, and I know the Lions need that, you know, fill in the blank of the player above him or below him in the draft, and I see what he's doing so far, and his production's getting better slowly. I mean, a similar amount of targets through week 7 this year and last year, and he's got a higher catch rate, more touchdowns, and slightly more yards. So I just, it's a slow-moving train, and I expected a speeding bullet, hence the tweet, we've got our Gronk from like last year, game one. So I think I just need to slow up a little bit and watch him evolve. It's like a Pokemon. Got to watch it slowly evolve. You can't just go from stage one to you're the best Pokemon ever, but I also want that for my team, so I want them to win. So
you're saying Hockenson has to catch them all.
He does. He better catch them all. Put a hat on him and call him Ashenson.
Literally have no idea what you're talking about right now. I played sports as a kid.
you can do both, you asshole.
Sure you can. I had a ton of Pokemon cards. But looking at it, Russ, and I'm going over to the stats side of this here, does it seem, and I think we mentioned this very early on in the year when this was starting, it seems that Hockenson is just perfectly hovering that 3 to 5 catches for about 50 yards every single week. We don't get much lower. We don't get much higher than that. So I guess the way to look at it, are you looking at it from the positive side of there's that consistent play from him, or is it more that we need the consistency to start having bigger peaks?
No, I think to expect that consistency to have bigger peaks is to expect a player that Hockenson's not. And that was my main issue when he got taken, you know, as early as he did. But I do have to say, now that he's drafted, now that he's on the roster, if we want to judge Quinn, we can bring his draft choice into it. If we want to judge Hockenson, we do got to stop that. Because it's not, he didn't get to pick, right? He's in this, and now what's reasonable to expect out of a second-year tight end? He's on pace for just less than 700 yards. That's a pretty good year for a tight end. It's not great, right? But it's solid. It's something that can make him a solid second or third option in the passing game on most any successful team. And if we're looking at him, like I went and found Gronk's rookie year, 546 yards in 16 games, 10 touchdowns, right? 34.5 yards per game. Hockenson only played 12, right? But 367, 30 yards per game. Now he's up to 42 this year. There is that climb there. Rookie tight ends, it takes him a couple years to get everything down. He's getting there. Mm-hmm. I think the peaks will get higher, but it's never going to be like that week one Gronk tweet that Jay sent out. We're not going to see that more than once every 3 years, probably. And that's okay. I don't think that's what they want him for. That's what you have Galladay for.
Yeah, so what we're saying in this is that Jay cursed Hawk. He prematurely crowned him and just put us in a bad spot. No, but Jay, safe to say, you're the leader of the fan club on this show for Hawk. You like him. You're critical of him when you need to be critical of him. But at the same time, like I said, you give him the praise. It's kind of the same question, but I'm not asking it from the analytical side. I'm asking it from the fan test, the eye test of a fan. Do those peaks have to start getting bigger, or is he swimming closely to potentially going into that kind of the same situation with Ebron, where the great talent drafted around him makes it tougher to validate what he's doing?
I think the cooler head fans will understand what like a good baseline stat for a Sunday or a Monday game should be, right?
Mm-hmm.
I sometimes jump off the cooler head. And I want the instant gratification. I want to validate a first-round draft pick player, and I want more peaks. I mean, going through his record this year, 5-for-5, 4-for-4, 4-for-7, 2-for-4, 2-for-5, 5-for-6, that's a good baseline. That's a consistency that maybe, like Russ is alluding to, is what is expected from him in an offense that's got Amendola underneath and got Marvin Jones and Kenny Galladay going deep. So I don't know. As a fan, I want more. I'm always going to want more because I want this team to win, because they have effectively taken my heart. But, you know, the cooler head people should know, like, hey, he's doing just fine, like Russ is saying. So I'm happy we got some yin and yang going, because I was ready to just throw my hawk off a bridge, and Russ is saving me a little bit, so.
All right, well, moving on. This week, our Detroit Lions keep it going, taking on the Indianapolis Colts. Like I said, we have a little Galladay conversation, then we want to touch on the big trade. But before we do that, I want to make predictions here, get into it. Like I said, playing the Colts, 4-2 this year. The Colts are a 57% favorite. Spread's only 2.5, so they're thinking this is a field goal kind of game. Over-under's 50 again. So, I mean, they're expecting points, maybe not as much as we saw this past week. Jay, I'll let you go first here on the prediction for the Colts-Lions game in Ford Field.
All right, Colts-Lions. I'm going to tee it up with the Colts first, and we'll circle back to Detroit. I saw a stat line that the Colts are 14-6 after a bye game, which is, you know, what we're getting out of the Colts this weekend. So it made me think, okay, well, they have Phillip Rivers now. What's he like? He's 3-11 in his career after the bye. So then I went and looked at the Colts wins this year, the Jets, Minnesota, Cincy, and the Bears. I said this last week, I'm going to stick to my guns. I feel like the Colts are a phony team. They might have a winning record right now, but with Phillip Rivers, and there's a little nugget that he's not good after the bye, I'm going to pick my Lions to win. I love what their O-line is doing. Seeing Matthew Stafford upright for as long as he's been and actually watching plays develop is a foreign concept, and it will still be a foreign concept because we don't get that. The Lions only had seven games last year where they didn't score more than 20 points. We haven't done that at all this year, and they're cooking right now. And Stafford's got the time to do what he's got to do. I think AP backs off the pedal on the amount of carries he gets. His yards per average is going down game after game. I think we get to see more Swift. I got the Lions winning. Hang on one second. Let me pull this up. My bad. I got the Lions winning 27-13 today, or on Sunday.
Wow. Not seeing much out of Phillip Rivers. Wow.
Nope.
Okay. I'm going to echo right off of Jay because I'm right there with him. This is a team that I think has some very puffed up four wins. Those are three. The Bears are a viable win because the Bears look to be a pretty good football team this year. Obviously, they had a rough showing against the Rams earlier this week, but as I've said before, the Rams defense is just a different level, and Nick Foles is not as offensively gifted as you'd like to think. I think we're going to see a lot of the Bears teams right now are kind of the Bears teams we grew up with. Don't have a lot of offense, but if they can get to 14 points in most games, they should win. So, that being said, I think, like you said, the Bengals, that's not a win to boaster on. You know, they don't really have too many big wins. Rivers is reaching that point. I mean, Eli's not in the league anymore. Big Ben looks good right now, but Big Ben also sat on his ass for a year and a half injured, so he's kind of got fresh legs going, and he seems to have the receiving core, you know, of a quarterback's dream going for him right now. So they're all reaching that point now where retirement is a viable thing, and I think Rivers is just trying to get that last little bit of football. He's chasing a title, but the problem is he chased it in the wrong city. Indy's not poised for a title right now. They have way too many needs. And I'm kind of I kind of went against it earlier, but I'm going with it now. The Lions do have a little bit of momentum. Two wins, beating against bad teams. They're still wins. They're finding ways to get to be ahead at the end of the game. And I think we're going to see that again. I don't think we're going to see a last-minute drive, but I think we're going to see Stafford late in the game getting the ball, trying to get Prater in a position for a field goal or trying to score that touchdown. I see this as more of a 24-17 kind of game. So I'm going to take the Lions to win 24-17.
Wow, both of you taking the Lions. I get to shit in the sink. Look at this.
Oh, please do.
So, first off, I'll address both of your point about puffed up wins, being that you're fans of teams that are sporting. Two of their three wins are against the Atlanta Falcons, who 2 weeks ago we talked, are they going to win another game this year? And the Jacksonville Jaguars, pause because everyone knows what that means. So they beat the Cardinals. That's the only thing the Lions have to hang their hat on. They were
who just took down the who just took down the 5-0 Seattle Seahawks in probably one of the best Sunday night games I've seen.
Yeah, no, Cardinals are good, and that's why I'm giving them credit for that one win. You can't say that's puffed up. That's a legitimate win. That's one legitimate win, and that's ignoring the fact that you were three field goals that were a combined 150 yards and a Todd Gurley brain fart away from losing to Atlanta.
Yeah.
Like that, you are inches either way on any one of those four things to lose to Atlanta. But that's how close we were here. So that's puffed up wins. Man, getting back to my topics here. Actually looking at the Colts, it starts with Rivers, right? We'll start there. Their two losses, he's thrown two interceptions both of those games. So there's your trick, right? He had six on the season, which isn't great, obviously one per game, but four of them came in the two losses. If you can force that, awesome. Would be nice if the pass rush got home, no help, because Griffin's not there. Also, the Colts have only given up six sacks this year. It's a good old line. That's a huge point in favor of Indy against the line. Also, Indy's got a pretty damn good defense. Sixth in turnover percentage, sixth in score percentage, first in yards allowed per play. Even if I think Stafford is better than Rivers, which I do, and I think he'll play better than Rivers, again, which I do, that defense is going to be too much, and that's going to swing it in favor of Indy for me. 23-20, I got the Colts.
Okay. This to me is about as close as you can put it to a toss-up. 4-2 to 3-3, and like we said, a lot of these wins are coming on just not being as bad as the other team. So I agree with you there.
To your 3-3 point, does it concern you two that last year they started off 2-3-1, the year before 3-3, the year before 3-3. Those final records are 3-12-1, 6-10, 9-7. Oh, 9-7 was with Caldwell. Are we feeling as optimistic about the 3-3 still?
I'm optimistic for the fact that if you go back and look at those teams, I like the talent we have right now. I think those other ones were. Listen, in the NFL today, it's very rare, these 0-16. You see a lot of 2-14 kind of things. But for the most part, most teams can manage to get at least 5 wins a year. Most teams. So that's why I think that was just that. The Lions managed to not screw up enough games to finish with those records. This time around, I see a little bit more of no one's panicking when it's, going back to the Atlanta game, when it's 1:10 to go, we have one timeout, and we got to go 80 yards. No one's panicking. You're not seeing those bad calls of holding after we just threw a game-winning touchdown. These guys know their thing. They know what to do. Every one of them right to the line immediately. I'm still wondering how the hell no one threw a flag when Kerryon got trucked on that last play before while they were trying to snap it for the toss down. How on earth is that not like a flag in some way? Oh, he wasn't set. You still can't hit the guy. So what you're telling me is that while Stafford's getting ready to get under center, he's not set yet. You're telling me that Ndamukong Suh can stand up and just smack him in the head and say, hey, there you go. Get back down.
Doesn't we'll try sound to kick him.
So 3-3 is still 3-3 to me. They still had to get those wins, be it against two bad teams. But I do think this is a year where we're not going to see a 9-game collapse. I just don't see it. I just think I'm fingers crossed. I just see enough talent on this offense, assuming number 9 can stay upright, because I think we'll all agree number 9 is playing great right now. He's playing really good. He's playing perfect system football.
Yeah.
Kenny, who we're going to get to in a minute, has figured it out. And they just have enough pieces working right now at the right time. They can chip off a couple wins before they get to some tough games, Jay.
See, I'm not comfortable with 3-3 at all. I would rather be 1-5 or 5-1, because then the rest of the season has a story. Right now, I'm in purgatory of start losing to get a better draft pick, even though probably the first 4 picks in the draft are solidified by garbage teams right now. Or keep winning and have a shot at this thing. Like, either be one thing or the other. 3-3, like, I was mad when they won the first game. I was frustrated when they won the second game. I'm in the third game now, and I'm like, okay, I enjoy this, kind of. Like, I put me in one way or the other. I don't like being put in limbo.
Okay. Ross?
I'm concerned. Okay. Frankly, they should have beat the Bears. This is, if you're going to make some noise, you're not 3-3 right now. That New Orleans game was up for grabs. Sure, you lose it, whatever. But this, it's more the manner in which they got there. Because the Bears game, a one-catch thing. The Falcons, a one-catch thing again. It's, I'm scared we're looking at another 6-10 season and we're just waiting for the hammer to drop. Hopefully, things will be different. We will find out. I think we're going to talk about it later, so I won't talk about it too much. But we had a trade at about this point in 2018 when the Lions were 3-3. We had another trade 5 days later. Well, we'll see if it follows a similar trend.
We're gonna talk about it right now, so you might as well just intro, because that was the next topic on the agenda.
Oh, well, perfect. Accidentally there. So, obviously, Griffin comes to the Lions for a sixth-round pick. What I was alluding to was back in 2018, Lions are 3-3. They traded for snacks, right? Similarly, gave a late-round pick, fifth-round pick. Went out, played their next game, lost, traded away Golden Tate. A lot of rumors about Marvin Jones. We could very much see a mirror there. And if you do, then that what we thought was a clear sign of the Lions pushing their chips in is really just shuffling the deck on the Titanic like they did in 2018. So it doesn't give me the warm and fuzzies like it should, because I was here 2 years ago, and I'm concerned they're going down the same path again.
Okay, so now I agree with you that the next week or two, next week for sure, is going to tell us what we're seeing. Are we seeing, like you said, are we seeing them go all in on the winning hand? Or are we seeing them, you know, kind of mix things around? It's time to get a new deck in there. I agree. But the question I want to ask both of you. Offense, we don't really need to mess with too much. There's not really anything you can add in there anywhere that I think is going to make an... I mean, unless someone like, you know, Julio Jones or DeAndre Hopkins is available to be traded for, which neither of them are, there's not a lot you can add on that offensive side of the ball that's going to make an immediate change. Defense, yes, we do need to make some moves. What I want to ask you both is, on a team that, in my opinion, already has too many defensive linemen, why the hell isn't the first priority to maybe trade for the one position we're hurting at, and that's cornerback? Why the hell, you have Coleman and Trufant both not playing right now. Even if it's just a rental till the end of the year, why are we not trading for a corner to try to get that position at least stacked a little bit, Jay?
I wish I had an answer for that. it's logical. It makes sense. It's about depth. It's about taking the weakest.
Of course it's logical. I thought about it, not Bob Quinn.
Oh. No, it just, that would make sense. That would improve the team at depth at its worst position. You know, like we would have depth even when those guys came back. So I don't know. I wish I could tell you what the fuck they think they're doing over there. Don't know.
I think I've got a beat on it as to why. And it comes down to money, frankly. The reason why Griffin's available for a sixth-round pick is because defensive linemen get paid more. Because the closer you are to, you know, the ball and the actual impact there, being a pass rusher, you get paid more. So teams will almost pay you to get rid of these guys. Because Dallas is headed the other way, and they don't want to pay him the I think it's $6 million left on his deal. So you get a discount on him. You're not going to get that same discount for a similar quality corner.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Patricia's system also uses a lot of three safety looks. So they have the three safeties that they like. The corners, a lot of the packages, well, we're looking at two corners. If they have the two that they like, maybe they feel that bringing in a new guy isn't going to fit the system right away. It's going to take some time. I don't know. I can't speak to that part.
Yeah.
But there are only 7 defensive linemen on the roster now with Griffin. It wasn't like they had 10 of them rotating through. They needed to add another one with Aquara going on IR.
Just with all the, I guess, with all, yeah, like with the off season and last year and all that, to me, it just felt like we were accumulating. To me, it felt like a like drivers. If you buy enough drivers, eventually there's one you're going to hit straight. Just keep buying them. You don't. They don't. Doesn't matter. It's not the Indian. It's the arrow. That's the phrase. It's not you. It's the equipment you have. And if you buy enough of them, eventually one of them is going to work. And that's what it feels like right now in Quinn and Patricia's attack. Give me this guy. Give me this guy. Give me this guy. Eventually, one of you is going to work out, and the rest of you, well, we just spent money on to get here, and you're not going to play. I'm coughing and talking about Mike Daniels because he never did a single thing here.
He was hurt a lot, too. Mm-hmm.
He was.
But that was a bust.
He was. I'm not going to take anything away from that. So that's just the perception I get. Listen, we said it yesterday. This guy made our lives a living hell for years in Minnesota. Kind of nice to have him on this side. Maybe he can take out some, put that pain back on Minnesota when he gets there. It'll be interesting to see. Obviously, we won't see him this week. He'll play again next week. Before we move on to college football, I said we had the Golladay topic. And I want to ask you guys this because watching that game the other day, watching the last couple games since Kenny came back, I mean, he's just in a different gear. Like I said, this guy is, when he's going and he's going well, this is a guy you can make an argument for being a top receiver in this league. Maybe not the number one or number two, but he's right there. It's a conversation to have. Russ, since we can remember, we've been lucky enough to see some very great wide receivers play in this town. Herman Moore, obviously Calvin, Roy Williams, Golden Tate. And, I mean, nowadays you hear everybody getting, like, they try to compare everyone to Calvin. In our lifetime, we have seen one person that can ever be compared to Calvin Johnson, and that's Randy Moss. No one else is comparable to Calvin Johnson. All the receivers we've had that intangible, that thing. What is it about Kenny that just, what is that one thing that just makes Kenny that great?
Well, I will agree he's not Calvin in any comparison. It's inappropriate. However, there was a throw against Atlanta on the left sideline where I went, oh shit, that was Calvin.
Yeah, I was right there with you. That's exactly what made me think of this question. So
yeah. Golladay almost got his back folded in half, mm-hmm. which again, oh hey, that's Calvin. I was literally just getting flashbacks to that. But that's what it is. He has the athleticism and now has the catch range to go into it. He's seen his catch percentage jump significantly since last year. He had never had a season with at least a 60% catch rate, right? And even 60% is below average. He's at almost 72% this year. It's a huge jump. And that's the biggest thing that I had against Kenny Golladay was he's not bringing down enough of his targets. I don't know that he had a single easy catch all day in Atlanta. Now he's bringing down everything. This is the ascension. This is the I'm a number one wide receiver. And I'm trying not to get too excited because they need to pay that man his money.
See, that's what I was going to go into next.
Pay that man his money.
Hell yeah, Rounders. Every time Golladay goes up, he should celebrate by putting his hands in his pockets. It's just, yep, that's a milli grab. This guy needs to get paid. And to answer your question, Eric, like it's going up, and he's putting his body on the line. That one catch, I think we're talking about the same one. He got hit by one dude, and then he got cracked by another guy, and he went down.
He got tabletop pretty good. Yeah, I know what you're... Yeah.
And how do you not break your arm when you're falling down, and your forearm is what's going to brace your fall coming down? I was like, ouch, that has to hurt.
Yeah.
So he's got shades of Kelvin, but this man's working for a payday.
Now, see, I think what both of you said incorporate perfectly what it is to me. He's not Calvin. Listen, Calvin was 6'6", 200 and whatever you want to say, of just never seen before talent. This guy was faster than everybody else. He could jump higher than everybody else. He could do it better. Kenny Golladay is a great receiver, but what I see in him, what I see in Calvin, he wants all of it. He has that competitiveness that he wants to finish the day not dropping a single ball. So that's why he'll go up and get anything, knowing for a fact he's gonna do five flips in the air and land on his head. He wants it. He's got that drive. He's got that hunger. This is a guy who genuinely wants to win football games. In today's football, you get rentals. You get these guys who, okay, you drafted me, I'm gonna try hard enough till it's contract time, then if you don't give me my money, I'm gone. This is a guy who He wants to be here. He wants to win football. He's buying into Stafford's thing, and I like it for that. He's just tenacious for the football, and it reminds me of Calvin in that way, kind of like you said, Russ.
So one additional thought I have on him. So I love to follow athletes on social media because it kind of shows you like what they do, how it is like live their life. Oh, look at them, great. But part of the thing I'm seeing with Lions players and ex-Lions players is I watched Slay, Diggs, Snacks, and Ebron after the fact take to their social media to vent. And lately with Kenny Galladay, he's got some sweater collab he did with Edelman, which makes me scared that he'll even do that with the New England Patriots. He's always replaying and showing his own highlights and, like, giving praise to Diggs, who is praising him. So, like, they go to their social media and they do these things with intentions. And he's trying to get paid, and it just, there's going to be that turning point, kind of like Slay, when Slay was out on Twitter and he eventually said, screw this, trade my ass. They're not coming out and saying that, but their intentions are showing it, and I'm just waiting for that day.
Well, Galladay did come out and say it. He had the Instagram post that said, quote, this shit gonna cost you.
Oh, yeah.
There's nothing subtle about this.
But see, the thing is, I'm throwing out a large speculation when I say this. The Lions aren't oblivious. They know what's going on. They know that eventually they're going to have to open the checkbook up. They're going to have to write a very big number in that checkbook. But guess what? They can do it. You want to keep this moving. This can't be what it's been for Stafford. He's come in the league. He got Calvin for a little while. It worked out great. Calvin went away. He got Tate. They started building the chemistry. They started building up again. He lost Tate. Stafford can't keep rebuilding chemistry for 3 years before it gets firing again. Eventually, you have to pay the guys, keep them here, and let's keep going. I guarantee you, there is a way to work out this deal where Kenny doesn't break the bank, but you still pay him the number that he knows he's appreciated and he feels like he's getting what he deserves. There's a way to do it. They need to find a way to do it, because if 19 leaves, we're in trouble. Because like you said, who knows if Marvin's going to be here in a couple weeks. But not only that, Hockenson's good. Hockenson isn't Travis Kelce or Zach Ertz. He can't carry a team's passing attack. And Danny Amendola is a great slot receiver. He's not a number one receiver. He's questionable to be a number two receiver on a team. So it's that thing of, we can't be drafting another wide receiver to let him have 3 years to build this up. We need Galladay in the Lions huddle every week, because we see how good we are when Stafford and him are playing with each other. So it's a perfect situation. Yeah, stop, Russ. Dear God.
That was a weird turn of phrase. That's all I'm saying.
When they are playing on the same field together.
I got it.
Can I just say that my favorite wide receiver, and this is totally irrelevant, but I feel like saying it, my favorite wide receiver was Anquan Boldin, and I missed his ass. He was just a strong dude who just went up for anything and knew he wasn't the number one or two receiver. I loved Anquan Boldin. I just, for what it's worth.
I don't know who that is. Anquan Boldin was a great receiver. He was great in Arizona. He kind of bounced around after that.
He was great in Arizona.
Him and Larry Fitzgerald were an amazing 1-2 punch, which Larry Fitzgerald, that guy just is not giving up. He is phenomenal. But anyway, moving on. College football is back. I know you don't want to talk about this, Jay, so let's just rip the Band-Aid off real quick. Jay and I didn't see much of this game. We were on a golf course playing with a bunch of cheaters. But we caught a little bit of it here and there. Michigan State Spartans fall to the Rutgers Scarlet Knights 38-27. Wasn't a pretty day for your Spartans, Jay. Rocky Lombardi, 31 of 43, 319, three touchdowns, two interceptions, no real running game to speak of, only rushed for 50 yards combined on 39 carries. We know that's not going to get it done. Jaden Reed, 11 catches, 128 yards, two touchdowns, probably the bright spot there. Receiver, you know, having a day kind of thing. Other side of the ball, though, you know, this Rutgers team just got done what they needed to get done. 170 passing yards, 106 rushing. Just kind of an overall decent day. We have bigger things to talk about, Jay, and I know you don't want to go through the pain here. So I'm just going to ask you this. I texted it to you yesterday. we're not going to get ahead of this season, but after seeing week one, knowing what's coming week two and beyond, what's the one light at the end of the tunnel you need to be holding on to get through this?
Oh, God. I'm stuck in a cave where there's a bunch of boulders that fell down in my entrance, and there's like this little crack for this one little rock, but I'm too weak to open up that entry. Like, it sucked. I had a great time golfing with you, buddy. I'm glad I missed the game. I went back and I watched it, and it brought me a lot of misery. The one to answer your question, I had a lot of negative notes. So I'm looking real quick.
No, feel free to pile on the negative. I'm not saying that. I was trying to make this not a let's dump on Jay for 5 minutes thing if I don't have to. Look,
dude, one of my notes is the truth hurts, okay. And I'm prepared to take it.
Well, look, it's a new coach. You guys kind of got blindsided with D'Antonio just one day walking in the room and going, I don't work here anymore, see you later, like that kind of thing. There wasn't really like a, at least Russ, when we knew Lloyd Carr was going, we knew all year he was going. There wasn't like a surprise, you know, retirement at the end of the game. We knew all year. This is Lloyd Carr's last year, so they had time to they did a terrible job prepping for the coaching change, but we had time to prep for it. You guys had a COVID offseason to prep for it.
Mm-hmm.
So it is tough, but you know Mel Tucker's a good coach. He's been successful at other places. Unfortunately, I think part of it, too, was D'Antonio saw the down year coming, and he just didn't want to ride it out. You knew Rocky Lombardi wasn't going to be a Big Ten quarterback that was going to keep you guys in games. You knew there was going to be a changeover of talent, especially on the defensive side. So it was the thing of you kind of knew this was coming. It just – I feel like there was probably a – expectation of, well, this is Rutgers. Come on, we at least can get this one and, you know, have something to springboard off of.
Yeah, there was a quote, I don't know if it was the third or the fourth quarter, forgetting the announcer's name, but he said, this is something we haven't seen out of Rutgers in, like, dramatic pause, 10 years. And that was the byline against my team. That's all that really needs to be reiterated. They had 50 yards on 39 attempts. Two interceptions. Lombardi got sacked for net loss of 24 yards. We had very bad ball management. I do like the stat lines on the receivers. There were some nice moves. I think it was Naylor. He put a nice juke on a guy and took it to the house, which was great. This is the end of the game. But they are an incomplete team. And if they're not already at rocky bottom, that rock bottom is coming near next weekend, and it's going to be against our rival. So I'm trying to find some light that this is the lowest of low. And even emotionally, for a new head coach and a new team in a COVID offseason, lose to your in-state rivals, they get to dance on you for a couple weeks, that should feel pretty low. So if we're at the low, then let's get up and go. Like, I don't mean to rhyme, but like this should be the bottom of where we're at with this team, but it's going to continue for the rest of the season that we've got ahead of us.
All right,
God
well,
help me.
We'll get to that game here in a second, but Russ and I get to do a little bit of celebrating. Not a ton, a little bit. Our Wolverines pull off a 49-24 win over the Minnesota Golden Gophers. PJ Fleck can go row, row, row his fucking boat somewhere else, in my opinion. Listen, I heard that all week from people. You ready to get row, row, rowed on? No, I'm not. I'm ready to row, row, roll the fuck over you. Listen,
nice. Tell us how you really feel, though.
I like PJ Fleck as a coach. I honestly kind of wish, like, when he was doing his thing at Western, I kind of wish Michigan would have given up on the, you know, Michigan man and would have made a push for him, because I think it would have been fun to see. The guy's got a lot of spirit, a lot of that, but you don't coach for a team that I'm a fan of, so guess what? You're on the wrong side of the ball, my friend. It is what it is. You want to come here? You want to be the coach here eventually? I'll embrace you. I'll freaking buy a row, row, row your boat shirt and everything, but for right now, you're on the other side of the ball. But listen, this Michigan team, again, Minnesota, it was a 21 team, no, or top 20 team, or top 25 team, so clearly a good football team. Michigan just kind of had it on all aspects, Russ. I mean, Joe Milton, who I was outspoken about, I did not think this was the guy. I didn't know what Harbaugh was looking at when he made this quarterback decision that now has McCaffrey transferring. So we don't even have the option if Joe Milton doesn't work out. But 15-22, 225 and a touchdown, 256 rushing yards combined as a team. no one guy really broke it. I mean, Charbonnet had 70 yards on four, which means he broke one. So, or his longest was 70. So he broke a big one and then hit a wall three other times. No one really, you know, no one guy. And then the thing I liked, and I don't know how you feel about this, again, Milton threw for 225. That means that the team had 225 receiving yards. No one person. I mean, Ronnie Bell, four catches, 74 yards. No one, like, it was kind of a balanced attack, which I kind of like to see. Defensive side of the ball, they played well. I mean, as we look at our Wolverines, Russ, coming out week one, they don't look as bad as I kind of expected them to look after this, you know, after everything in the offseason, the changes, kind of losing some very talented players and having some people decide, we don't really want to play here anymore.
Yeah, no, it was encouraging. It was an encouraging start. I'm not ready to jump on the Milton hype train because, again, he did go 15 of 22, right? Mm-hmm. Nothing too special there. I mean, compared to Shea Patterson's first start, right, which was against a much better Notre Dame team, went 20 of 30 for 227, right? Now, Milton obviously much better in the rush game, but this, he's not blowing the doors off the hinges here. But the important part, and this is what Harbaugh's been saying since he got here and we finally saw it, is you pass on predictability and you carry a big stick. And that's what Milton lets you do. You're never really sure if he's going to pass or run, and he can do both competently. So you can just run the ball down your opponent's throat, which Harbaugh, noted QB whisperer, loves to do. And then you get to pass every time that they commit a little bit too much on it, so it keeps you unpredictable. You don't do any one thing all that well in the passing game, but you're never really sure what's coming. And Milton lets you do that. So I'm excited for that, for the type of quarterback that he is, not necessarily the caliber of play that I saw. I will say, though, that I'm still here for your go fuck yourself rant. That was pretty entertaining.
Anytime, man. Anytime. Happy to help. All right,
did you see P.J. Fleck go for a squib kick like halfway through the second?
Yeah.
They did.
He tried a bunch of
different
stuff.
They didn't have their kickoff guy.
They
had to try and be really creative with a lot of stuff. And it showed, like, this was a Minnesota team hampered by injuries and unavailability. This was not full squad Minnesota. This was not ranked 18 Minnesota. But it's still an important win.
I don't know what the stat was. They're just going to be bad. For last year, the guy that was second in the country in this was Joe Burrow, the guy that won the Heisman. Minnesota's quarterback was the number one, I don't know if it was pass percentage or completion percentage or whatever. This guy was number one in the country last year in one of these stats. So to be able to get after him and kind of, you know, give him a little of a beatdown was kind of enjoyable. All right, Jay, let's get this over with. We got other things to talk about. I don't want to make this painful.
It's not painful. It's just the truth, my friend.
Michigan is a 93% favorite. The over under is 53. The spread is 25.
Was it a move? I had 24.5 this morning.
It's 25 on the number. 25 on the number. So spread's 53. Now the dick in me would say, okay, 50-3 Michigan, but I'm not gonna do that. That's just mean.
He's gonna go 100-3.
No. I'm saving that for Day in Ohio State. We're not going 103. I'm just saying he's the one that said they were going to lay 100. We'll get to that in a couple weeks, Russ. Yeah. Calm down.
Okay. Spoilers.
Yeah. Everybody calm down. Listen, Michigan's playing well. Michigan State's got a lot of questions to answer. This is going to go one of two ways. Either we're going to see exactly whatever we expect. We're going to see a 40-13 game where Michigan just lays it on. And in the fourth quarter, we see all the backups just run the ball for a quarter straight. Or we're going to see Mel Tucker have a defining moment and pull something out of his ass and make this a real game. No, we're not. 40-13 Michigan over Michigan State this week.
That hurts. I mean, I want Mel Mother Tucker to show up and turn this into an amazing game and bring some highlights to my year, but this is all I want. First of all, I've got U of M winning 40-16. So I'm literally drinking what you're putting in my cup. But what I want is just to give Rocky Lombardi a chance. He's the ugly toy I have in my toy box. I want him to stand up and actually try. I'm very afraid of your defense. Your defense was able to expose Minnesota, and that blindside hit that forced the fumble and the turnover there was just nasty. And I'm afraid of your defense more than I am your offense. And I feel like we're going to get exposed as well. So, the one comment I have real quick on some of the gambling odds, it is a -3,000 money line. And for people who may or may not know what that means, you
Michigan is -5,000.
Oh, no, it's
5,000 now. You got to put $5,000 down to make $100. Just speaking in round terms, that is outrageous. And it tells you what, if that's what Vegas is saying, okay, I got to take $5,000 and make $100. No, thank you.
But you're a Spartan, Jay. Why wouldn't you? It's +1,300 on the other side. Lay $1,000 down. It pays out what?
Yeah, just $1,000. Just throw that out there.
Well, that's better than $5,000.
That, tell you what, I understand.
Give me $200. I'll give you $50 back. It'll be a better investment.
Deal.
I State's going to lose. Yeah. I think it's going to be 40-16. I liked my spread of 24.5 because then the spread plays, and I don't want to see Michigan cover the spread on this game just to screw bettors over. But just give Rocky a chance to look like a competent person for a second, please. That's all I'm asking. I think it's a small favor. Please don't hurt me.
Jay, real quick, because I like to throw a bet out there every week, so I'm going to throw a bet out.
Oh, no.
Yes or no, Michigan puts up 3 touchdowns in the first quarter.
Oh, fuck me. 3 touchdowns off of any type of a play. It could be just a defensive turnover.
At the end of the first, it's 21 to whatever you guys have.
Well, let me see where I'm at in my own individual betting standings. I'm -1.
Yeah.
So you won.
You got a chance to get back to even money here, my friend.
All right, I'll take that.
They will or they will not?
Michigan will, as long as you disagree with me,
yeah.
Which I don't think you will, so this isn't going to be a bet. I think Michigan will put up 21 in the first.
I pose the bet. I'll take either side of it. I'll take it.
Oh, my God. Because
at the end of the day, if they have 20... No, I'm putting my money on that we could still get 20 points and be 20 points ahead of you, and you are down two bets on us.
Uh-huh.
So I'm hedging my bet here. We could still put up 20 points and be safe. Sorry, Russ. I didn't mean to interrupt. Russ, you're... as a former U of M alum, what do you got here?
Well, I'm always a U of M alum. I don't give up being an alum.
You were until you went to Ford University, and now you're not an alum anymore.
Still not a thing.
It's still a thing.
No. So Michigan State continues their rocky start to the year. 7 turnovers. If you want to talk about Michigan defense exposing Michigan State, 7 turnovers against Rutgers probably beat them to it. I can't imagine that's going to happen again. However, it's in the DNA, so that's scary. Michigan's going to run. They're going to run a lot, so that'll stop it from getting too out of control. I don't think this MSU team is a 7 turnover team. They're going to show better than they did against Rutgers. Also, how could they not? They were better than Rutgers in every stage of the game except for turnovers. That will improve. I got 42-20. Comes in under the spread. Just barely, but they'll keep it interesting. Maybe a late touchdown. It's rivalry week. It's not going to get too crazy, even if we want it to.
I want it to.
Come on.
I mean, go ahead, Jay.
Does anyone think they're going to cover the spread then?
Well, what did I say? 40-13?
Yeah, Eric does.
Yeah, 40-13.
Okay. Might be some side bet action on that.
You talk to me, man. You got my number.
Oh, I got you.
Yeah, anytime. Moving on, this week we have the Bermuda Open at for the PGA Tour. Might be one of the more boring weeks. Listen, the Masters is a couple weeks out. Guys are going to start gearing up for that. Tiger. We talked about it last week with the Houston Open. Tiger Woods has already announced he's not playing in the Houston Open, partly because this 2,000 fan thing doesn't make sense. So, in keeping with it, we probably, I listen, I'm an avid golf watcher. I can name about four people in these matches or in these pairings because there's just not too many people playing in this right now. Everyone's kind of gearing up for it. So Russ, because I can't wait any longer, there were so many names in there that he can do so many things with. Your pairing for the Bermuda Open is?
So I tried to triangulate a winner here for Bermuda, but I got lost. So you'll have to be lenient with me here. I'll try, though. This past week, we saw last-second heroics from a former Georgia Bulldog named Matt Stafford. Mm-hmm. What are we going to see this weekend? Last-second heroics from a former Georgia Bulldog, Hudson Swafford, which I'm not convinced isn't Matt Stafford with a wig. Plus, we have Stafford, one letter, Wise, Mize, one letter, Keith Mitchell, Scott Mitchell? I don't know. I got lost at the end. But it's mostly there. So I'll take Swafford, Wise, and Mitchell, and probably never see those names again in my life.
Probably not. Probably not too many of them. Jay, over to you.
It'll forever be my favorite segment is Russ now aptly putting it as triangulating.
Yeah. Well, look, this is honestly, this is a week we could have taken it off and it wouldn't have meant anything. I just wanted to hear what Russ came up with because some of these names are perfect. The only thing that hurts more is that Cameron Tringali wasn't playing this week because that would have been your triangle.
Oh my God.
Right there. That would have been your triangle right there.
I am now in a feud with him for taking away that pun. I will find you.
We're gonna get a tweet from Russ in like an hour, like "F you, Cameron Tringali. How are you gonna not play in the Bermuda?"
You had one job,
and it was.
I've got a golfer.
All right,
I've got a golfer. You guys are sandbagging on, and you should pay attention to this weekend. I do. I'm taking the pairing of Sink, Stenson, and one Pat Perez.
Oh, love me some Pat Perez.
Pat Perez is all the confidence and cockiness you want out of a golfer without the douchiness of Koepka and my favorite, Bryson. My opinion. Like, he is just a legitimate, like, he's a golfer. And, like, he's not trying to be anything other than that. But you got Koepka doing all these weird things, and we know what Bryson thinks. He's going to blow Augusta away in one shot. I'm big on Pat Perez. He also does a lot of charitable work with Bill Murray and the Chive and Chive Charities. So I'm a big Pat Perez guy. He had an injury. He had to leave the tournament for like a year or so. When he's back, he just looks like John Daly Light.
Well, all right, here's the thing. I'm picking that same pairing, Jay. I had it all lined up. Stuart Sink won the Open Championship that would have given Tom Watson his final Open at 60-something years old. Had a chance to win it, lost it to Stuart Sink. Henrik Stenson is one of the most consistent clutch golfers. Pat Perez, he literally is the rock star of golf. The guy wears Jordan golf shoes. Michael Jordan's every week, posts pictures of him. Jay likes him for all those reasons, but Russ, I honestly believe Jay likes him because he wants Pat Perez's head of hair.
Yeah, he's got some.
Look at Yager.
Got some
Yager on the green.
Got some straight mullet going right now. It's awesome. The guy is a rock star, and I love the pick, Jay. It was a great call. Great call. As we move on, for those that don't know, the Los Angeles Dodgers won the World Series last night against the Tampa Bay Rays, finishing in a 4-2 series, one game short of it getting to 7, and I at least would have felt gratified. I know Russ, for a fact, picked the Dodgers. Jay, did you end up taking the Dodgers or the Rays?
I took the Dodgers.
Took the Dodgers. Okay, cool. But it kind of, look, I wrote this rundown before they won this game. This next topic manifested itself last night without even trying.
Yep.
As it's, listen, if you turned on your radio today to a sports station or you turned on your TV to anything, you heard about this. Dodgers, is it Josh Turner? I know it's Turner, but is his name Josh Turner?
Oh, it's a bad year for a Justin.
Yeah. It's Justin Turner. I can't remember.
Selfish asshole Turner.
Yeah. Justin Turner tested positive for COVID, taken from the game, and after winning the World Series, is seen out on the field celebrating with his teammates. For those that don't know, the next topic was going to be, we've gotten through an MLB, an NHL, and an NBA COVID season so far. And I asked the question to both of you. What's the shining moment, or what's the thing they did right? And then what's the thing where they just missed the mark? Well, I'm going to tell you right now, Major League Baseball, that was the mark. You missed it. You got through it. You guys had the biggest challenge of it all. Everyone else bubble quarantined. You traveled. Early on, it looked bad. Early on, oh, God, we're not going to get baseball. We're really not. You did it, though. You got through. And you know what? My dad said it best, so I'm going to say it right here. My dad said it was kind of the, here's your one shining moment, immediately followed by the, well, fuck what you thought was a good idea. Let's do this. And that's what it was. It was that thing of you, all you had to do, just, I get you want a title. I get you want to be on the field with your team. You can do that in the locker room, and it's nothing. You can be in the locker room. Everybody comes in. You can hold the trophy. You can be around the guys. They can find a way to do it. Being on the middle of the field with cameras on you, probably not the way to do that. So for me, Major League Baseball missed the mark there. They just didn't do it. But other than that, I for the most part, I thought Major League Baseball did a great job this year. They were off to a rocky start, found a way to make it work. Believe me, I had my doubts when I heard these guys are going to travel from place to place. I thought it would have been a lot better just to pick four diamonds and just kind of bubble the same way. But, yeah, Russ, they got all the way through and come up short at the last second.
I can't say I'm shocked. They had their very first chance to show us if it was really about just trying to get games in or if it was actually about being safe and protecting the players. And you saw how that ended up. But it's disappointing. And I think baseball did the worst out of the three sports we're talking about here as far as everything that's going on in 2020. They were the most stuff your thumbs in your ears and just move forward out of any of the leagues. And it's, I mean, it was the pandemic cherry on top, right? Seeing him there, at least wear a mask, dude. Help. Do something. He had a mask on. Could you imagine if this had gone to seven games? If he was positive and he was in the clubhouse with everyone, and then it goes to game seven, and half of the starting lineup can't play because they have COVID because of this one guy?
Yeah.
Oh, and now that's how the World Series is determined? Dude.
Well, it might be stuff. This has the potential to be the first championship parade where the entire team could be hospitalized.
Yeah.
They might have to do a Zoom. They'd have to do a Zoom parade. Just fake backgrounds behind them. Yeah, thank you, thank you, thank you.
It's actually a perfect opportunity to have a reverse parade, and we're just all going to come marching down the street waving at them from inside the building.
And they're just in the hospital beds, and you just wave. Yeah, actually, I'm for that. That would be really good. Put them in a giant plexiglass box, and you just have people walk by.
I want to get to the NBA and the NHL, but before we do, I want to ask you guys both. I saw this multiple times on Twitter. I don't know if any of you guys, either of you guys, saw it, but I this to me was almost a why would they do that? But a couple of people I saw tweeted, why does sports even need to advertise that? You could have easily just shown them celebrating, not mentioned at all that Turner went back out on the field, let them have their moment. Instead, their title is overshadowed by the fact of what this one guy did. Why does sports have to do it? Why do they have to bury something that is a blatantly obvious, you did the wrong thing. We're not going to let you get away with it, Jay.
Because people are dumb. The whole thing is very stupid, in my opinion. I honestly just don't know. They should have kept him in the dugout and not even been a part of anything, and they screwed that up.
Russ?
Yeah, I mean, they should have quarantined him off as far away as they possibly could have. But even if we don't see it happen, it still happened, right? Yeah. You still got to hold people to a standard. That's why we have the press. That's why we're covering this. These are real people living not real life. And the rest of us normal people, this is called entertainment. So I'm not going to criticize anyone for covering this. This is what happened. People should know. If you're going to show your ass, people should know.
All right, well, okay, Jay.
The one thing I did not like from the press, and I caught this on the radio into work today, is I forgot, it was on ESPN, but they were saying, like, you run through a wall to get out onto the field to be with your teammates no matter what. And that was the one guy's take, which is shocker, ESPN, right? But it was just like, do we just forget about the line of humanity and pretend like Russ is saying what's real and not real? Like, we just go, oh, but that was the shining moment. No, that's what movies do. This isn't a movie. This is a pandemic. So, like, again, getting your results in the second inning, that's when you should go, oh, shit, get off our field.
Clayton Kershaw didn't run through a wall. He went out the dugout door. Like, you don't have to run through a wall. But at the same time, he also...
Let me run through a wall to get my teammates.
He also jogged to his teammates. Just a brisk jog. Get a little bit of, get a little bit of sweat going. Now, I get what you're saying. Like, it's that moment of you see these guys, whether it's in the NHL, you know, guys jumping off the bench, tossing their sticks and their gloves and going crazy. And I get that. It's a euphoric moment because you work so hard to get there. But at the same thing, and I'm looking at you, Turner, you worked so hard to get there. You just sabotaged everyone because you couldn't stay off the field for 15 minutes. And like Russ said, put a mask on. Worst case, put a mask on. You're still going to catch flack, but at least you're not 2 feet away from someone hugging them with no mask on, breathing on them. Those are the things you don't do. So, I mean, it's bad. Before we move on to play of the week, I want to ask for NBA, NHL, anything jump out at you guys? Things that were accomplished well, maybe missed the mark here, Jay?
NHL, just going to come out and say it. It might be controversial, but it's how I feel, so I'm sorry. The NHL needs to continue to have fireworks when someone wins the Stanley Cup, because that is the highlight of the ending of a Stanley Cup. It's like they did it in St. Louis on the ice. It was great. They had no one in the fans. It was 4th of July in that bitch. They were shooting off things left and right, and then they did it for like 2.5 minutes continuously. I'm all about pyrotechnics after a championship. My only miss I had on all that, the NBA not rigging the finals to have a better team face the Lakers.
I know not rigging the finals.
They had a golden opportunity to have the Bucks walk down there and play the Lakers. So I'm a little perturbed that it didn't live up to its controversial hype.
Honestly, though, I would make an argument that was the better series. That Miami doing what they did. Everybody wants that underdog team that shouldn't be there.
Yeah.
That actually has a chance. And watching those guys play out. I mean, Tyler Hero is now a national name because of what he did in those finals. You don't see that if they don't. They don't get there. It's just, it was the right way to do it. It was fun to see.
Tyler Hero has a rap song with Jack Harlow, and the song is actually called Tyler Hero.
Perfect.
And he's in the music video. So, yeah.
How very descriptive.
Very nice. Russ, over to you. Anything from those other two that really you felt stood out, good or bad?
I think the NBA nailed it. I mean, plain and simple. Bubble, they executed it. Great. Social justice and all of that was happening. They're the only league that actively acknowledged it right away. They had players walk off. Absolutely killed it. They were the bright and shining moment in this shithole of a year. NHL did better than I expected. However, Tampa Bay had their Turner moment on their parade and had random people drinking out of the cup right after. So great. The Stanley Cup has COVID. I hope you're happy, Florida. That was a big misstep.
I agree. NBA did it right. And for me, I think it was more enjoyable because it was the first time in I don't know how long you watched 50 basketball games where every single game was sold out because there wasn't 500 empty seats. You get sick of seeing that. NBA games are not what they used to be. People don't really go as much. So it's like watching an open gym. Like there's people scattered around who are just waiting to get in the game. This was a little more entertaining. You know, everybody, you got the big monitors behind it. It just made for a fun, different kind of thing. So I like that. I agree. Bubble was executed well. NHL, to me, I thought saw the biggest risk. That's a contact sport where you can't really afford to get too far away from the person you're playing against. So it was really kind of that challenge. They pulled it off. But yeah, Russ, you took it right out of my notes. You don't let other people drink out of the thing you just won when we have a little bit of a problem going on with germs. So not a big fan, but it is what it is. Wrapping up the show, going to get play of the week and our funny plays of the weekend. Russ, just because of where you went with this, you're going last. Because the final play has to be your game of the week play. It just has to be. So, Jay, I will let you go first here with your plays of the week.
All right, we're going to start with play of the week, and we're going to start with a show favorite, Baker Mayfield. The glorious part about this play is, I don't know, 2-3 seconds out of the snap. The play's only developed about 10 yards in the route for Donovan Peoples-Jones. Might have heard of him from Michigan. 10 yards into the route, Baker launches it up like Russell Wilson moonshot and knows exactly where that ball is going to be and where DPJ is going to be and to win the game against Cincy. But it was beautiful, and it sounded like this.
You got to watch Landry down the seam. Mayfield towards the end zone. It is caught. Was he in? Yes, Donovan Peoples-Jones. Baker Mayfield taking his shot, and the Browns have retaken the lead.
I absolutely loved watching Baker also dance in the locker room afterwards. He's got the TikTok moves down. All the TikTokers out there, whatever. He's cool.
Now, Jay, real quick, because of all the flack, did this last game, did it kind of put Baker back in the comfortable starting quarterback in this league? Or because a lot of people were saying how this team needs to move on from Baker. They've seen everything they're going to get out of him.
That's just classic Cleveland. They expect to move on from a quarterback after X amount of games. So they need to leave Baker alone and let him cook.
Perfect.
Just leave him alone. Leave the man alone, damn it. My funny play of the week, which I thought was already funny enough. I thought it was perfect in its existence, but Russ made it better. I don't know if we have that audio clip.
We don't have that one. We have the actual audio, but Russ did make it better. I thought about getting it. I really did.
It is the Tampa Bay Rays walk-off blooper? Like, I put a question mark on it because it was just stupid. The only thing that would have made it better is someone's pants fell down while sliding into home. It sounded like madness, and it was like this.
Two on with two out, and the Rays are going to ask for the biggest hit in the life of Brett Phillips. That is into center field. Here comes Kiermaier. Phillips has tied the game. A Rose Arena coming around. Throw home. Now he stumbles. But the ball gets away. Tampa Bay wins it. Brett Phillips, game four hero.
I wish Joe Buck
didn't call that play. Yeah, absolutely.
No. I wish Joe Buck did the narration for all my real life bloopers. They'd probably make them just as comical. I like me some Joe Buck.
Jay, did you watch the last couple innings of the game last night? Russ, I'm assuming you probably had it on. If you listen to the show, I am not a Joe Buck fan. Joe Buck did one of the greatest things ever last night in talking about this, saying how, and you see games like these, I can't help thinking about my dad. But then he brought up Vin Scully, the voice of baseball, and saying how Vin did this for 60 years, the voice of it. And it was just that moment of noticing, this is the Dodgers legend. I have to tie him in here somehow. Because without Vin Scully, none of us have these kind of jobs. He really was a big name in it. So to me, I don't give Joe Buck a lot of credit, but I'm going to give him credit on this one. That was a big moment, and it was a right moment. Yeah, a little golf clap for...
He's a professional. He knows what he's doing.
He did a good job. Okay, over to mine. I'm going to go with my funny play of the week because it's super quick, super short. So for those of you who don't know, this is what it sounds like when you hit a golf ball well. Just nice, crisp contact. This is what it sounds like when you're John Rahm and you shank a ball.
He figured it out.
Didn't sound too good.
One
more time, just for you.
Yeah, he figured it
didn't
out.
Sound too good. That, went about 60 yards the wrong way. Just a really ugly shot. As a golfer, when you see that, you just feel bad because Jay and I both know exactly what that looks like and exactly what that feels like because we did it quite a bit on Saturday. But just an unfortunate shot. You don't like to see it, but they're fun to watch. Over to my play of the week. Listen, Michigan football is back, so it had to be a Michigan football play. I'm just going to let the play do it for me.
He thought Clay texted his receiver just to catch up. The news was delivered as he is blindsided. The ball pops into the hands, and Donovan Jeter has a fumble return for a touchdown. Michigan exploiting that reshuffled offensive line. Wolverines take the lead.
Defensive touchdowns are always amazing to see, and that's a quarterback telling you that. So much fun to watch, breaking through the middle, taking the football away, and rumbling for the touchdown, Jay.
I close my eyes, and I see golden locks being bounced off the turf as Rocky Lombardi's head gets exploded, and I'm scared.
It happens. Russ, over to you. Your plays of the week, as you see fit, my friend.
Okay. Well, we'll do it in chronological order again. Found this one shortly after wrapping last week's episode. Daniel Jones getting caught by the turf monster mimics the Giants' chances to win that game. Oh, looking good. Looking great. Clocked within half a mile an hour of top speed of Tyreek Hill's fastest run. Oh, no! Flat on his face. He loses, the Giants lose. Oh, it's misery and it's beautiful.
Pretty good against him then.
From the 12, Jones keeps, gets a block, takes off, and he is gone. Trying to stay upright, and he trips.
Oh, that turf monster.
The only thing between him and glory was the thought of, did I leave the oven on?
It's a great, funny
play of the
week.
My play of the week teased already. It is, of course, the Lions. The Falcons take the lead with just over a minute left. And no, this isn't a Nick Cage movie, but it was, in fact, gone in 64 seconds. Stafford completing the comeback, touchdown to Hockenson, Detroit in elation.
Here we go.
That's it. The money play. This is it.
Let's see what the Lions dial up. 2 seconds to go. From the Falcon, 11-yard line, down by six. Final play of the game. Stafford empty out of the gun. He's got it back. Looks. Pumps one. Steps up. Looks. Throws. End zone.
Yes!
Carr gets down. Detroit Lions. TJ Hockenson.
Yes!
They did it. They tied it. They're an extra point away from winning this game. Oh, baby. How big is that?
Yes,
how big is that? Matthew Stafford magic.
And give the big fellas some love up front because they gave Matthew the time that he needed to scan the field, to pump it, to bring it back down, to step up and to find TJ Hockenson coming across the end zone. Awesome play by the Detroit Lions.
Extra point away from winning it.
Yes.
Yes. I had to give the full play there. It was just so perfect.
I love Dan Miller. Dan, his voice is perfect.
Just super hyped. Super hyped. It's what you want. It really was just an amazing play. I would like to say, just because it was a little late, I didn't get the audio in time, I want to put an honorable mention out there to DK Metcalf just becoming the fastest man on the planet to catch Buda Baker on that interception, saving a pick six. Just amazing, Russ.
Did you see that Buda Baker was mic'd up for that?
Was he really?
Oh,
yeah,
no.
And he popped up. He goes, how did he catch me? How did he get me?
It was amazing. I have to find that now. That was amazing. But see, and that to me, and I texted both of you guys this the second it happened. Name another guy, receiver-wise, of that talent that would ever try that. All these receivers, interception, hands on the hips, okay, whatever, go to the sideline. This guy was on the other side of the field when that interception happened and just goes after it. And what's hilarious is, if you got to watch it back, Russell Wilson is a fast individual. He hawks Russell Wilson down in amazing fashion. Russell Wilson looks like he's a fat kid jogging compared to what DK Metcalf did. It was amazing.
I love that the biggest knock on 40 times is always, well, when are you just going to run 40 yards in a straight line during a game? Oh.
Then. it was, and then I saw he got up to, I think it was like something like 22.6 miles an hour.
Unreal. It's,
like, that's amazing. Phenomenal. My first car didn't go that fast. And Russ can attest, he rode in it.
It's true. I was terrified.
It was horrifying. That's another episode of Armchair Sports Talk. As always, my thanks to the stat man, Russ Ivanek. He did it again, making us sound a lot smarter than we really are.
Oh, it's a blast, and it's always nice to not get off to a rocky start to your season.
Well, we just made his blood pressure rise. Sergeant Salty, Justin Marcus, I understand this weekend is not one that you're probably looking forward to, but at the same time, we appreciate you all the same coming on here, giving us your take.
I will always spit it how it is, even though it doesn't feel comfortable, and there will be an honorable tweet of me drinking some whiskey about it. 12:22 now. I think we're going down in time.
Pretty soon that thing's going to be at like 8 a.m. Just enough poking, it's going to be an 8 a.m. tweet. And as always, I am your host, Eric Dorsch. That is one small step for us, one giant leap back in Detroit sports broadcasting.
What you've just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. May God have mercy on your soul.